You're listening to the Irish Times Roisin Meets podcast.
Welcome back to Roisin Meets. The Magic Moment is a picture book that aims to help children explore difficult emotions and face their fears. It's written by Niall Breslin, who you might know as Brezzy, who has kind of reinvented himself quite a few times. I've heard him described as the Madonna of music in Ireland in terms of his reinventions. The book is illustrated by Sheena Dempsey, and Niall wrote the book because of his own experiences with anxiety and his master's in mindfulness that he's studying at UCD. And he wanted a way to sort of explore emotions with kids and to make them understand that it's okay to be sad and that there's techniques that you can use to help yourself in those times. We also spoke about his music career and what it's like going back to UCD as a mature student. Here he is, Niall Breslin, Brezzy. So, Niall, we know you in lots of different capacities and you seem to be able to reinvent yourself all the time. You had your autobiography out, you're a rock star, all those things, and now you're a children's author. And this is something you've been interested in for a very long time, is how to kind of start children from an early age thinking about mindfulness and techniques that can help them, because life is hard and we know that, so getting in there early. So tell us about the idea for the book, first of all.
Well, I think it was a logical progression to move into kids' books from music. It was inevitable. No, I think there's a couple of reasons I wrote it. First is I'm studying. I'm doing my master's in mindfulness in UCD, and I spent most of my master's reading about kids' brains and kids and how kids are perceiving the world and young kids, and it kind of scared me a little bit. They're dealing with too much. Their brain simply can't cope with that amount of information, and it just kind of got me thinking a little bit. I have an immensely vivid memory of my childhood, probably too much.
Really?
I remember
from some anxious times, like.
No, I remember my childhood being amazing, and I do remember one really confusing part. I remember saying this to my mother. I remember my dad used to go away a lot. Like he was in the Irish Army, so he was overseas most of my childhood. And you couldn't Skype him. You used to write a letter to him every 2 weeks, and your mum would say, only write nice stuff. Because like he'd be opening that on his own, obviously away from his family. Yeah. But I remember the army used to pick him up at 3 or 4 in the morning, and we would stand in the hall saying goodbye to him, and I could see his shoulders going. And I'd feel like crying. And then my mum used to always say, please, let's not cry because it might upset your father. And I was like, well, I feel sad. Surely I should. And we'd go upstairs and you'd hear your mother crying and hear it. Because like you're talking 12 months away from your father. So I just remember being confused with emotion. When you feel something, should you say it or should you repress it? And that was something I remember. But I also remember my relationship with my grandmother. Nana Mac, we used to call her. She's a Scottish woman. And I was incredibly close to her. And I used the grandmother in this book to be the person that delivers these messagings. Because sometimes you're almost too close to your mother and father. And there's a familiarity with them. So everything they say is, yeah, whatever, mum. But when your granny says it, it's like, oh, I'm going to listen to this.
Before we get on to Freddie, who's the star of the Magic Moment, we'll talk about him in a second. He's a great little character. What is it about children and mindfulness that you're particularly interested in? Because I know you've been working before this with A Lust for Life of trying to get and getting mindfulness courses into schools, making it sort of part of the curriculum rather than an add-on or something that they kind of occasionally do. Why is that so important?
Let's be really clear about mindfulness here. It's still in its relative infancy when it comes to research and science. And that's important, and that's a really big important part when I went back to study, because it's been thrown around everywhere at the moment about everything. I remember, I always revert back to the 90s. Do you remember they had ab machines?
In what machines?
Like ab machines on TV. Buy an ab machine, and if you just use this for 5 minutes a day, you'll have abs. We're doing the same to mindfulness.
Okay.
Mindfulness isn't easy. It's a journey. It's a skill. It can be difficult. It can be incredibly exposing for certain people at certain times. There has to be an element of duty of care involved with mindfulness training. With kids, it's slightly different. With young kids, because you're just trying to regulate their, you know, sometimes they get very overwhelmed, anxious, happy, overly excited. And for me with mindfulness, it's a brilliant vehicle to talk to young kids about emotion.
Yeah.
And that's what's really strong about it, without that being too evasive for them or too difficult for them to understand. And I think the other thing, an awful lot of the research that I've been reading is, I think we underestimate kids. I think we're almost overprotective now of having these conversations with kids. So I think mindfulness is a lovely way. And I give an example of one of the things I say with my nephew, Billy, who's 6. He goes, he gets really excited. Say before he wants to go to bed, he gets, I don't want to go to bed, I'm really excited. And I tell him, there's a little fire in your tummy that gives you all that energy and you have to put that fire out. So let's take 10 deep breaths. And every breath takes the fire down and takes, and all of a sudden you can see him. And he engages with it. Well, one big thing with kids that I've found is give them a physical cue. Give them something with their, you know, their fingers to squeeze together, something to do with their hand, put it on their chest, put it on their stomach. And if you give them that physical cue, trying to tell, now I'm not a parent, I'm not a father, I don't think. I'm just waiting for a 6'6", like 13-year-old to knock on my door one day and go, hi, Dad. That's a joke in case anyone is unsure. Before your mother wakes up, what's this about? Yeah, I think a physical cue is really beneficial for young kids. Because I said, one thing I said from working with a lot of young kids is when they get overwhelmed, telling them to breathe is pretty pointless. Just breathe. Would you go away from me?
Yeah.
Telling them to go, get your fingers. That's the magic moment. Get your fingers and think of a happy thought.
Okay, let's talk about the magic moment because that is very key to it. So tell us about Freddie, and it's about a trip to the swimming pool. And what happens? We don't want to do any spoilers, but I suppose I think we can get away with it. I don't know how many. I don't know how many kids.
We're not putting it on Netflix anytime soon, so it's okay, Roisin.
I don't know how many kids listeners I have, but anyway, so tell me about him.
Ruined it.
But it's kind of based on you as a kid.
Yeah, it is, and I had a huge phobia of water all my life. Funny enough, and now I do a lot of open water swimming, which is weird. Yeah, the swimming pool for me, it was a lovely, because I remember a lot of my friends have kids and they're like, oh, I'm having real problems with my kids at the pool. I'm like, they just get overwhelmed, they're scared, or they get there and all of a sudden they're like, I can't go in. So I just wrote this story about Freddie who's really excited to go to the pool, cannot, his first time going, but when he gets there, there's loads of big kids making lots of noise and it just overwhelms him a bit. And he goes, oh my God, and he says to his daddy, I just want to go home. And then he's really sad because he wanted to go swimming, but he doesn't understand why. And he comes home and then his granny comes over that night and she goes, listen, Freddie, we all get scared. We all get a bit, you know, but here's a lovely little thing that you can do when you get scared. And teaches Freddie this magic moment trick, which is about thinking of a really, really happy memory that you can remember. I think happy memories are a really good anchor for kids. If you look at the definition of mindfulness, it's about present moment awareness. But if you actually look at the true definition of mindfulness, it's not. It's about anchoring yourself.
Whether and whatever helps you do that.
Yeah, with a kid, a happy memory is a really powerful way of doing it because it takes them out of that moment where they're overwhelmed. For me, it's my breath or it's my body. That's how I anchor myself. But for young kids, it can be a happy thought. Give them that happy thought and actually get them to engage with that happy thought. Really think about who was there. What did it feel like? Where in your body did you feel that happiness? And they're going to go, I can feel it in my tummy. Good, brilliant. Now they have a location of an emotion that attaches to their body, because as we get older, we start to grow apart between our emotions and our body. They're both linked. So every time you have an emotion, you'll feel it in your body somewhere. And saying that to a kid and then giving the thumb and forefinger and it says, squeeze it together, close your eyes and think of that memory and take 10 breaths. And every time you find yourself getting a bit scared or a bit overwhelmed, just do that. And they start practicing it every day. And the more they practice it, the more it actually becomes a very good go-to for them at any level. And the thing about it is there's many different techniques you can do with kids. And I'm looking at other ones and stuff, but I love this one. I do it myself. And I got, like, we all get overwhelmed. Like, I'm watching all the Brexit stuff now going, oh my God. Like, are these people actually, how in the name of God are they actually even, this, like, it's utterly, you know what's overwhelming me is, over to all the Brexit stuff, I know this is a complete tangent.
Don't worry.
From kids' mindfulness, is the utter disrespect they have for our country. And that hurts, you know. And
the ignorance.
Pure ignorance. Yeah. And I mean, it just seems, it seems to be, and obviously not all of them, a lot of them are very, very clued into, but it was just a disregard they had for what, as a country, we've gone through. So yeah, that throughout the whole Brexit thing. So like, as I said,
you're
that's just an example.
Yeah,
I'm just watching it because you need to know what's going on and be versed in the world and whatever. But yeah, I find, for me, obviously my mindfulness training is a little bit more advanced. I've been meditating 6 or 7 years. It's an integral part of my day, but I'm still terrible at it. I'm really not good at it, and people need to stop. And that's the beauty of mindfulness. You can't be bad at it.
You are talking to a lot of children lately with the book. And like, for example, today you're going to speak to 500 kids in the National Library. Good luck with that. What kind of reaction are you getting? Are you finding that this message is really obvious to kids, that they're liking it, or what are they saying?
What's brilliant is certain schools, a lot of schools, to be fair, teachers are starting to incorporate it into programs, into their daily routine. So it becomes something that they're kind of accepting quite quickly. Obviously, you'll have certain kids get quite excited, especially when you take them out of the school environment. They get really excited because they're, you know, I'm not in school. So it takes a little bit more work. But I find what's lovely about it, they're really, really busy. They're really frantic until you start reading them. When you read, they're in. They're in and they don't care. And it's that lovely moment where I start, one thing I realized throughout this process is kids love books. Like, we had this, I'd say, oh, kids just use iPads. No, they love books. They still love books. And they love seeing the pictures. They love feeling the book. They love looking at it. They love kind of, and I think that to me was going through that with kids. And actually, the first day the book came out, I went down to my nephew's school. And he, which was an interesting, Raharney National School down in Westmeath. And the first thing he said to me, he said, I know you. And he goes, I'm your grandson. I'm like, oh, Lord. This hasn't started very well. This is me. I'm your grandson. And I got this horrible, what? Is somebody not telling me something? So by the end of it, the kids just assumed I was a really young grandfather sitting in lecturing them on mindfulness. So I felt, they said, you look really young for to be a grandfather. I'm like, yeah.
And is the book nominated for an award? Is that right?
It is, yeah. That was very chuffed with that. You know what? Like, you do write the stuff. You still have huge levels of, you don't have that self-belief. You're just doing it because you're like, you don't know how it'll be received, you know, whatever. So everyone, no matter if you're in a creative industry, everyone has that. Mm. And having, I suppose, written a book before, which was an entirely different process, this was a much more, I suppose, less evasive from my own personal perspective. So I got a call from Gill, the publisher, to say, listen, it's nominated for the Unpost Book Awards kids category. And I was like, you know what? I rang my mum and go, I'm really chuffed about that. I'm not going to pretend and go, oh, yeah, it's cool. I'm like, I'm really, really happy about it. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what the crack is, but I think it's good. And it's good that your peers and Sheena, who illustrated it, like the two of us were just over the moon.
Brilliant. You're going to see my mum there because she's also nominated for an
award. I know. Yeah, amazing. Every time I go to events, I'm always sitting beside your mum. So hopefully we can organise that we can sit. And we are literally solving every issue on planet Earth for 3 hours. So all these beautiful speeches going on. And by the end of it, we have a Bible of how we're going to fix the world.
That's so funny.
And with each glass of wine, our ideas get more
improved. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so. Are you going to write more books for children then? Is this a part of a series? Because there's so many different techniques, there's so many different issues that you could address. It seems like there's lots to do, or is this a one-off?
Well, I'm in the middle of finishing my thesis and my master's, so I have to probably keep my head down and do that and finish that. And then, yes, what I would love to do with the book is to explore different emotions that kids experience that perhaps they don't have the language. And a lovely story yesterday of a young mother was telling me that her father was meant to pick her up every Friday, and when they didn't pick him up, and she was able to say, she was getting really upset and she was holding it in, but then she said there last week, she goes, I'm disappointed. Now she had language to describe how she was feeling, and then the mother was able to talk to her about it. And that language is the bridge between communication when it comes to emotion and including mental health. If you can tell people how you feel and have the language, it's especially for kids who, let's face it, are navigating a world that I'm not sure I could have. It's pretty chaotic for them. The good news to parents is they know what this is now. Kids know what emotion is. Secondary school kids know what anxiety is. And you might think, oh, that's not a good, that's a really good thing.
Well, it's really good because we didn't know. And we were all going through things and thinking we were freaks. And then, like, you know, you write so well about that in your book, in your sort of memoir, about the fact that you feel on the outside and you feel like no one else is experiencing this. And we're much more.
When I experienced it, I remember saying, I was in a Christian Brothers school in Mullingar. A viable option in the 90s in a Christian Brothers school was possession by the devil, because that's what it just sometimes felt like with me. It felt like there's something in me that's not me and I can't control it.
Yeah.
So I was just watching, don't watch The Exorcist, don't watch this stuff, don't watch The Omen. And the last thing I was going to go up to was one of my Christian brothers to say, I feel really overwhelmed. And I remember one really, really clear thing that happened to me that will stay with me forever, was when Kurt Cobain died. And Kurt Cobain was to us what Ed Sheeran would be to many young people. Now, he was iconic. He was so important to a lot of us. And the only conversation we had around him was that he was, by the teacher screaming at us, telling us that he was a coward. That hit us all, because we didn't even hear the word suicide.
Yeah.
So these are the things that are changing, which are really positive. Yeah. That would never be said now. That would never be the way it's dealt with. So we've moved on hugely, and there's huge progress, and we have to note that. We're now moving into a new phase, which is how do we develop systems? And that's a bigger, more difficult, and slightly, obviously, more far more complex conversation.
And you're a student now in UCD, is it? When he's
the creepy old guy, yeah, walking around, yeah.
I don't know about so creepy, feel like, but yeah.
Yeah, well, that's how I feel. Do you ever see Old School, the film? That's what I feel like going into UCD. And I have a student card, which is the best. And you know when Vigo...
Oh, cool, you get lots of discounts.
Oh, yeah, and I'm using them, 10%.
Of course you are. Pretty
everywhere,
right.
Top man especially, because you know the top man, the people behind in the counter top man are always really trendy young kids. Yeah, and you're like, have you got a student card? I'm waiting for you to go, of course I don't. I went, yes, actually I do. 10% off those jeans that never fit me.
But are you enjoying that whole student experience?
Yeah, do you know what I'm loving now is that I love my class. Mm. They're good energy. They're good people. They're there for the right reasons. Mm. The conversations that we have are mind-blowing. I wrote a piece yesterday about a conversation that one of our, she's a psychotherapist, but she's doing her master's in mindfulness. And she said, and we were talking about something in class, she goes, some days, you know, I need to recognize the Donald Trump in me. And I thought it was a really powerful thing to say because that's in all of us. And it's not because we're bad people or we don't care about our values, our morals. It's because sometimes we become so unaware of ourselves because we get so lost in the crap that's happening outside and overwhelmed by it. And what I've learned through the 2 years of studying this is the biggest thing you need to do, I think, as an individual, is to learn what's in your control and to try and put all your good energy into that. And what's within your control is how you treat people. How you treat the people you love, closest to you, your relationships. You have utter control over that. That is your responsibility. What's happening with Brexit and all that stuff that overwhelms us and all the terrible stuff that happens in America, we do not control that. We cannot control it. And it, the irony is that's the thing that seems to overwhelm us most. So maybe just, to me, is what the Masters has really taught me is redefine what's important and put as much of your energy into that. And that's not what a Masters is meant to do. You know, it's meant to be, education, yeah. Education. It isn't, but I think more than anything, it's taught
people. But that's great because it's more a holistic thing. You're actually, that's what education should be really, you know, more than anything, I think. We better talk about music before you go. You have a band and you're still rocking around.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
And you have a recording studio as well, which is a successful business too.
Yeah.
How's all that part of your life going?
Really good, an essential part of my life. I couldn't live without it. I couldn't live without guide the music in some way. Everybody has something they love. Mine used to be sport, not any longer. But music has always been there for me. It's always been the most mindful I've ever been is behind a piano, behind a guitar, on stage. And the irony, once again, is people go, you talk about having anxiety with the stage. I love stage. It's when it's not there. I don't have social anxiety. I have general anxiety disorder. It's there all the time. So staging is when it stops for me, which is quite nice. Getting in front of people, I'm fine. But yeah, I think with the band, the band is a prime example of forging relationships because a band is a very complex team. You're creative. You have to respect each other. It can be really, that's why bands like you too, like I just look at them and go, how have you done that? How have you done and maintained those relationships and whatever? That's their biggest achievement, in my opinion. And I think, bands are quite complex, but I love it. I adore it. We've just finished a new album. Called The Last Great Algorithm.
Why did you call it that? I was curious about that one.
Because the idea was that we have algorithms for everything now.
Yeah.
Literally everything, except no one's figured out themselves. The one thing left that we spend all our time trying to figure out everything else, but we don't take enough time to go, well, that's actually me. That's how I did work and that's how I deal with. And I got it through a lot of the work that we would study around neuroscience and the band are all getting our brains mapped. We're doing neuromapping to see what our brains look like to be the cover of the record and stuff like that. So I'm bringing what I'm learning into the equation.
And so they're like, oh, here he comes now.
Yeah, and even the band are like, we're what? just run with me here, lads. Run with me. Even if it doesn't make it, I'm just sitting there. And then like a guitarist, Justin, is sitting there thinking there's some kind of dystopian Orwellian kind of, why are they mapping my brain? I said, it's all right, Justin, there's nothing in there.
Lovely. Well, listen, the book is called The Magic Moment. It's really good. My kids love it. And they immediately got it. And they're going around like this with their fingers clasped together and thinking of their happy memories. So I think what you're doing is fantastic. And I really appreciate that you're out there doing it. And I know you're going to do loads more in the future too. So come back and talk to us about that.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And that's all we have time for this week. Thank you very much to Niall Breslin, who is doing great work with A Lust for Life, and I'm sure we'll have him back in here again to talk about more projects. Remember, you can subscribe to Roisin Meets wherever you get your podcasts, and you can always find us on irishtimes.com. Today's podcast was produced by Jennifer Ryan with JJ Vernon on sound. I'm Roisin Ingle, and I'll talk to you next time.